This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 76, where CJ and I are going to talk about some of the announcements that have come out of the Microsoft Build Conference, recorded live April 29th, 2015.
Welcome to the Microsoft Cloud Show, the only place to stay up to date on everything going on in the Microsoft Cloud world, including Windows Azure, Office 365, SharePoint, Exchange, Link, and related technologies. Just the information, no marketing, no BS. I'm Andrew Connell.
And I'm Chris Johnson.
And we're just two dudes telling you how we see it.
Hey CJ, how's it going?
Not bad, AC.
Oh my God, I wiped out.
Oh, dude. These conferences, man, it's day one and I'm already completely tired and ready for bed.
It's day one after, and this is my second conference in 2 weeks. So I did the London conference last week.
Yeah.
This week is Build, next week is Ignite. So
I feel like I've run a marathon already.
Totally do. I'm always wiped out from these things. I'm not sure what time zone I'm in right now.
Yeah.
But hey, so in this episode, we're going to just kind of cut to the chase. It's going to be a relatively quick episode here because one of the things that what happened today is they did the first day of the Build keynote where they talked about things around Windows, around Azure, around Office 365, and a lot of some of the announcements are coming out this week and showed some cool demos. We're sitting in the lunch area late in the afternoon on the first one, and they're cleaning up the linens and stuff. So there's a bunch of bags going on. So you'll hear the background noise. Apologies for that, but hey, it's a conference center.
Exactly.
This is actually a quiet spot.
There's not very many spots to escape the madness.
So. No, there's not. It's classic conference thing, right? What is it? It's about 2:30 in the afternoon.
Yep.
You've had lunch. I have, and I'm having popcorn right here. That's my lunch right now.
Exactly.
So I'll go find something later, but
yeah, I'm surviving on caffeine.
Oh, that's me in a little bit as well. So, hey, so cool stuff today that they talked about. They kicked it off. Satya Nadella came out, talked a little bit about just Microsoft, then came out, talked about some, then it was Azure, so yep. Scott Gu, and then a yep. couple minutes, I guess, Office 365, where Rob yep. Lefferts got up there with Satya, and then yep. had a lot of Windows stuff at the very end.
Yeah, it was heavy, heavy Windows, right? Well, Windows 10 is coming, yep. and there was lots to talk about.
So. Yeah, crazy news. So where do you want to start, man? We're just going to do a couple of recap of some of the news we've seen, and then
why don't we blam through the stuff I know about?
There you go. And then everything we don't know about.
And then we can pick things off for the rest of the keynote, right?
There you go. That'll work, yeah. So yeah. I guess the first one, I saw Goo came out and gave some like wickedly crazy numbers on Azure releases. Like Azure has more data centers worldwide than AWS and Google combined.
Yeah.
That was crazy.
Yeah, that's... That's been like that for a while, though.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's new news to me.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, I don't know, maybe at last Build, they talked about some of those numbers, and it was, maybe it wasn't quite at that level, but I think with, new data centers, like the one in Australia opening up recently, it's yep. just getting bigger and bigger, right?
Yeah, in Brazil, and they manage over 1 million servers, over 500 different feature releases in the last 12 months.
That's madness.
How do you freaking manage that?
Yeah.
And those are releases, and that's not all. That doesn't include preview and GA and price changes and everything. But you factor all that stuff in, huge.
Yeah, yeah. They like we've said, right? Lots of shows they just keep cranking the goodness out.
Yeah.
So they keep it coming.
40% to all you small businesses out there. Get a load of this. 40% of all the Azure usage is coming from ISVs and startups. That's a cool number.
Yeah, that's nice, right? Because it's like they're trying to basically. Say that, you know, if you're starting a SaaS business, you should do it on Azure, right? There's a bunch of activity going on there already, and it's a good spot to build your apps.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. The Docker piece was kind of cool.
Holy crap. Yep. I think I peed a little.
Yeah, me totally. Well, this stuff really like totally floats my boat, right? Because I don't know enough about it.
Yeah.
And so when you see it, you're like, that looks like magic.
Yeah.
Right? Because yeah. you've got no idea what's happening behind the scenes, and it's pretty sweet. So they had... Mark Rusinovich, who's, I think, what are they called? Technical fellow?
Technical
is that
fellow,
the right
yeah.
word? Yeah, yeah, technical fellow at Microsoft, who runs a lot of this stuff, had him deploying a web app up into Azure and using Docker mm-hmm. containerization, is that the right word?
Yep.
Something
yep.
like that.
Docker containers.
And deploying to Linux in Azure using Docker.
From OS X.
OS X, yeah.
And then attached Visual Studio live debugging.
And it debugged it, yeah.
Holy shit.
How cool is that?
3 years ago, 2 years yep. ago, Microsoft be able to say that kind of stuff?
No, that was crazy.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
The only thing that was Microsoft in the whole thing was ASP.NET and Visual Studio. And the rest of it was, in Azure. And the rest of it was open source, so competing OSs.
I remember we had a conversation yesterday, and I said, there's going to be two things that I think like, I totally blow your mind that I want you to try and think about what I'm thinking about tomorrow, because I knew what was coming, and see what you thought. And there were like maybe four or five. Right? This was, that was pretty cool. But then,
was that one of the ones you were thinking of?
No.
Oh, okay. See that one. That one did blow me away. Okay, but go ahead.
And then Hanselman. So Scott Hanselman came out and talked about development. You know, ASP.NET development, Node development, what's going on with MVC5, and all of that sort of stuff and the improvements there. But then he was like, that's all pretty cool stuff, but I don't want just cool. I want to come out and like totally blow your mind.
Yeah.
So how about we do this on a Mac, right? And not just like Notepad++, but like a new first-party tool called Visual Studio Code, which runs on OS X and on Linux.
And Windows.
And Windows, yes.
Yeah. You forgot about the mothership.
Yeah, so new code. It's not full Visual Studio, right? It's a lightweight code editing tool.
Yep.
But it does more than that, right? It's so you could say, well, you could just use Sublime for that, but you can't do full, proper, like, sort of, what's the right word? I want to say compile time IntelliSense, like it's smart IntelliSense.
Yep.
It's not just autocomplete and also debugging.
Yeah.
Right? So you could, in theory, write a Node app using Visual Studio Code on a Mac and then deploy using Docker to Linux in Azure. What?
That's crazy. I mean, now you sit there, Microsoft now has an editor. Visual Studio, we got native Visual Studio on Windows, we've got Visual Studio Online in the browser, and now we have Visual Studio Code, which it's just like, just think HTML, CSS, no designers, all focusing just on the markup, just on the JavaScript, just on the code, runs in all the different environments, Git integration as well.
Yep. Not to mention
syntax highlighting and stuff.
It was .NET runtimes for Linux and Mac.
That's right. Those were a preview today,
preview,
right?
Yep.
That's pretty cool.
That's pretty sweet, right? So that means you could write an app, take it real basic. You could write a console app and run it on a Mac.
I'm looking forward to playing with it.
.NET libraries. Yeah, it's pretty sweet.
Hey, if you got a Mac, 62 meg download expands to 144 meg .app package, and I just dropped it right on my desktop and double-clicked and fired right up.
I really want to play with it. Like, I quite like Sublime, but I think this would be more useful for me with native Git integration and lightweight code editing.
Yeah.
Pretty sweet. On Windows, I think I'll give it a shot.
I'm looking forward to seeing where they go with it. Having a nice, lightweight editor. When you fire up Visual Studio, I don't care what kind of machine you got. It takes a few seconds for that thing to fire up. Maybe a minute or two sometimes, right?
Yeah.
And a lot of add-ins. It's a beefy app. It takes a ton of memory.
It takes memory.
You're doing a web app. I mean, you're doing an Office 365 web app. You're doing a SharePoint add-in. You're doing an Office add-in. Oh, yeah, there's another announcement. No longer called Office apps or SharePoint apps. They're add-ins and SharePoint add-ins.
We'll get to the Office news soon.
Oh, we'll come back to that. Okay. Yeah. I know Azure did this new thing about Azure Service Fabric, which I need to go go look some more. I think it's a friend of mine went to the session, talked to him later, and he says it basically looks like a way for you to, it's a hosting service for microservices where you don't have to worry about state, you don't have to worry about scale, they do all that stuff for you. So
I see.
But it's a big new thing. I definitely want to dive into it.
Yeah, way behind on that, sorry. Don't know much about that.
You see the SQL Azure, Azure SQL database news?
Well, I did see it, but I can't honestly tell you much about it because I was absolutely panicking backstage that our demos weren't going to work. So I wasn't paying much attention.
I was, and I took notes. So we had 160,000 SQL Azure databases are created and dropped every single day, 10,000 databases running in Azure today, and then they announced a bunch of new stuff for it, things like full-text search, that's big.
Yep, that's huge for building apps, right? That's really useful.
It's very big. Another one for Elastic Database Pool. This was pretty cool. So when you build an application and you partition databases, one way is putting all, if you have an application that's multi-tenant, so multiple customers' data is going to be in the same spot. What's cool about this is that one of the options for architecting your application is
sharding
all the data in one database and sharding it, or putting it in separate databases.
Yep.
But that's expensive with Azure because you have individual database costs and stuff. So this allows you to create a pool of databases, one query string, and it knows how to go through and to partition the data based on certain stuff in the query
string. So it takes away all of that funny logic that you need to write in your app to deal with multiple DBs.
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Does all that stuff for you. That was pretty cool. And there's a bunch of features around that about...
God, that's really hard to do properly. Like multi-tenant, like knowing how to partition data and do all that sort of stuff is actually quite hard to get right. So abstracting that away from a developer to a certain degree, I guess, is probably a really good thing.
Yeah. Let them do it, right?
Yeah. Exactly.
They also talked about some stuff about SQL Azure, about and a new data warehousing service. That was pretty cool, the ways of getting data into it. And a new thing called Data Lake to get data in, which I need to go read up on some more, but it's pretty cool. And they, I mean, they, those people clapping, those, that's the audience standing around the podcast right now. They're freaking loving this.
They're pretty stoked about data lakes.
Yeah. It's a good idea to do this right outside the session room.
Yeah. So then after the Azure stuff, we got some Office 365 stuff.
Yeah.
We were up, I think, So Satya talked about, you know, Office as a platform and why developers should care and why it's so important to Microsoft. And then Rob Liffitz came out and did a demo or a whole bunch of demos.
Yeah, demo
about some
fest.
Of the things. Yep.
Yeah.
And so for some folks, it would have been quite. There was some new news and some things that weren't news, but with news to a whole bunch of developers, right? Yeah. That aren't Office folks.
Yeah.
So he showed off like the add-in model and the Office client applications, working, building an add-in that works across the Office desktop, Office Online, and Office on the iPad. So we showed SAP running in Excel on the desktop, Excel online, and then Excel on the iPad.
And the Excel on the iPad is the new part, right?
Yeah, Excel on the iPad is the new part. So you can build an add-in.
Sorry, the add-in for Excel on the iPad is the new part.
Exactly. So you build an add-in once, runs across all of those places. It's the exact same programmability model, and now they run on the iPad. So if, when your users jump on an iPad, and they can still get access to their, whether it be like a add-in that pulls data out of a line of business system, or in this case it was out of SAP, mm-hmm. sort of runs everywhere. And that was a problem with the old add-ins in Office, like the COM add-ins was like, they only worked on the desktop.
Yeah.
There's no extensibility across
on the Windows desktop.
Exactly,
it didn't work where Office is now.
Right, so on the Mac, right, the add-ins work in Outlook for Mac. And so you could use like the DocuSign app on Outlook, for example, on a Mac or on Windows on the desktop or things like that.
And people aren't familiar with that. They're just websites. It's just a website. There's a little JavaScript file that gives you context to the hosting application.
Yeah.
To be able to read the email in Outlook or read and write to a spreadsheet or read and write to a Word doc, whatever, wherever it's running. And an XML file to register it, and poof, it just works.
The people that have been looking at this stuff a little bit in the past will have noticed we've stopped calling them apps and have started calling them add-ins.
Yep.
I'd hardly call that a announcement, but it's just a renaming to make more sense for users. Like, users understand add-ins. The industry is aligned around them. We didn't change the name because of our developer audience. We changed it for our user audience to make more sense to them.
As a developer, as somebody who likes to teach people this stuff, it was getting hard. Because, I mean, you sit there and say, what is it? It's like, well, you're going to create an app for Office that's going to live in Outlook.
Yeah.
Like in the Outlook app. Like, wait. So an app lives in an app that's in an app.
You can have apps inside Office apps.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they're add-ins to Outlook.
Right.
And the Outlook app.
It just makes sense. And there is some technical baggage, right? Because we have used add-ins as a term in the past. For COM add-ins, which holds a lot of bad baggage for people because it was like they were really hard to write. They crashed your apps all the time. They were pretty shitty.
Yeah.
But these are the new style add-ins that are all based on web technology, so HTML and JavaScript and all that.
Yeah. There was a lot of APIs that were also released too.
Yeah.
That we'll have to do another show on just all the APIs that Microsoft is releasing for Office 365.
In short, we're trying to get down to one URL to rule them all.
Oh, yeah. The unified API.
The unified API, which is... Really, the Office 365 APIs plus the Azure APIs, plus there'll be more APIs coming from other parts of the Microsoft Cloud.
Xbox Live, maybe.
Exactly. Get them all into one place so you'd be able to access all these APIs just through graph.microsoft.com.
Yep.
And which means you could look up, so when I say look up my profile or whatever, then I can just go /files, see my files in OneDrive for Business, /events, see all my calendar events, see /messages, see my messages. /groups to get access to all my group information. And you don't have to worry, that bit lives in Azure AD, so I've got to call this other endpoint. Or that bit lives in Office 365 or in OneDrive for Business versus in SharePoint versus in Exchange, and have it all accessible through one location. But in actual fact, it's not a whole set of new APIs. It's the Office 365 API is just all accessible through one endpoint.
Yeah, it's just a new front end.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah.
A different URL.
Yeah. That's cool stuff. We got to get somebody on to talk about that stuff.
Yeah, we should get Rob Howard or Yina to talk about that.
Oh, we should definitely do that.
That'd be cool.
Then they did the Windows keynote, which the news out of that, I'll say it. I don't want to put you in a position to have to say it, but the news out of that was freaking awesome. But the delivery was really disappointing. Because it was like the guy that did the delivery, it was just like, I mean, you guys now, so What were the different announcements? You can now build an app that's very, it's, you can build a web app and have it run on as a universal app, right? That's huge.
Yeah, so there's, you can run a web, it's like running your web app in a browser, except now the web app can interact with Windows through a special API. So for doing in-app purchases, for example, or doing a live tile. So if say you've got a website that's, I don't know, like a travel website, and a CRM app, let's use that, and you're on the free version, you want the paid version, it could interact and integrate with the in-app purchases in Windows so that you don't have to deal with the commerce. Let Microsoft and Windows take care of the in-app purchase and commerce model, and you just leverage off that.
That was one. And then another one was Android.
Before that, there was Win32 apps in the Windows Store.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, so .NET apps, Win32 apps in the Windows, without having to just
even
do WinRT.
Even more than that, they were virtualized apps, so using AppV technology.
Yeah.
So when you acquire them from the store, like Photoshop or what have you, it'll stream it down to your machine in a virtualized app sandbox, I think. I don't know if I'm using the right terminology.
No, let's just say logically.
The same way Office runs from Office 365. It streams it down. And then when you uninstall it, it's all cleaned up and gone.
Yeah.
So that was number two. And then third thing was Java apps from Android being able to run on Windows Phone or Windows 10 on the phone.
So you can take an app that's actually built for Android, and there's now like a JVM with integration with the native like Windows Phone
controls,
the keyboard, the back camera, button on its camera.
Yep.
So that now those apps now can run right in line, right on a Windows phone. So it kind of kills the app gap. I looked at that and I put a tweet. I was like going, did Microsoft just kneecap Android? Because I mean, now you don't really, it's not going to kill Android.
No, I think it's
just makes
everybody
it easier.
Everybody will look at this as like, oh, Windows Phone doesn't have apps, right?
Yeah.
But if you're sitting there as a developer, and even if you think, well, yeah, if I had lots of time, I would go write a version for Windows 10.
Yeah.
It's still a really hard equation for them. But if you can take the code out of the equation and say, oh, yeah, you don't need to rewrite everything, then it makes the equation a lot simpler.
Yep. Yeah, it definitely does. It makes it a lot simpler.
Yeah, so that was one. Android apps, they'll also go into the Windows Store as well. So that it's not, you can't install an Android app from the Android Store or whatever they're called.
Right.
Onto Windows
Google
10.
Google Play.
As a developer, you would have to say, I want to put my app into the Windows Store so that I can, you know, sell it to Windows 10 users.
Yeah, and then the other one, the last one.
This just
totally
blew my mind, right?
So this is the one where you told me I was going to be blown away at, sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it was Android and iOS were the two I thought you would be.
Objective-C. Yeah.
Sorry, so
you could build an app in Objective-C.
The Android one and the Objective-C one. So, yeah, take your Objective-C app, open it in Visual Studio, and compile it to Windows 10 for Windows 10.
So it imports Objective-C into a Visual Studio project, and then you compile it and you can deploy it to Windows 10 or Windows Phone.
So Microsoft wrote an Objective-C compiler to do this.
That was freaking, that's huge. And it works today, and that's what Candy Crush?
Candy Crush was done using this, yeah.
Candy Crush on Windows Phone was done using this, so it's live in the store working today.
Well, it compiles it down to native code, right?
Yeah.
The same as you would with a XAML and C# app.
Yeah.
Native code, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it's an Objective-C compiler instead of a C# compiler.
So you build an iOS app.
Yeah.
And you can easily just suck it right in and deploy it in Windows Phone.
I think there's a lot of caveats with that one. Like, there's certain kits that it covers, like UI kit, and a couple of others.
Bugs.
I don't know all the details,
but
it's not all of the kits, I don't think. So it's not a perfect, you know, every app will just magically compile. It's not a silver bullet, let's put it that way.
But it's a pretty big deal.
If you've invested a lot in your Objective-C app and see the value in distributing it to Windows users, then it just takes that whole pain and suffering of, man, I've got to start from scratch and rewrite my app.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big, big hurdle. I thought that when I first heard about this a few weeks ago, maybe a month or so ago, I just lost my mind. I was sitting in this meeting room, there's a whole lot of really important people at Microsoft in this room, and I thought I was the only one about to slip off my seat with excitement. Like, they were all talking about it and things like that, and I was just sitting there trying to be really quiet and be like, oh, this is so cool.
Oh my God.
That is pretty amazing. That's really cool technology.
It really is. That's really cool they've done that. I mean, that's bold. It's a bold move.
It'll be interesting to see what people think of it. And if there are lots of people that take take Microsoft up on it, right, and actually use it.
Yeah, I wonder how many are actually being submitted to the store to do this now. I mean, people actually tried to do it already, but
I said to somebody today, it's like nobody chooses to write something in Objective C.
No, you do it because you have to.
But you do it because you're going to make lots of money on iOS.
Exactly. Yeah.
And since you've got your code base, why not reuse it again and build it for Windows 10?
It's almost like making a deliberate decision to not go that extra mile, because it really is just an extra mile. It seems not to just go that extra mile to be able to pull that stuff in. So
exactly. Yeah.
I think that applause says we should wrap it up.
Yeah, so they gave away a laptop.
Oh, yeah. Got an HP Spectre 360. It's a pretty
nice
cool machine.
Nice device. It looks really slick.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
And a Raspberry Pi, I think, is rumored to be coming. It's
supposed to be coming soon, so that was cool. That will be cool. That will be cool. Yeah. If that happens, we'll see.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we'll have to do another one of these, maybe like early next week.
Dive into some more detail.
Yeah, so we'll do this again on Ignite. So we got a backlog of a bunch of news to cover. We knew it was going to happen with this one, but...
And stay tuned for the next episode.
Oh, yes.
We've got some special guests. Anybody in the startup world who follows like the bootstrapping movement and things like that will be pretty excited about it. We're going to get Rob Walling on the podcast from Startups for the Rest of Us.
Yep.
And his co-founder of Drip.
Derek Reimer.
Derek.
Yep.
Primer.
I screwed that up again.
Yeah, Derek on the show. So stay tuned for that.
Awesome. Yeah. Cool, man. All right. Let's wrap it up.
Thanks, Essie.
Yep. Have a good one, man.
If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text. We'll record it as a WAV or an MP3 file and provide a link so that we can play your question on the show. Our theme music is an excerpt from Evaporated Eric by Monk Turner, used under Creative Commons. You can subscribe to us in iTunes by searching for the Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find a full transcript and show notes of each episode. You can find us on Facebook searching for the Microsoft Cloud Show or on Twitter at MS Cloud Show. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.